It's time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hello and welcome to episode 40 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Barnes. I can't believe the Cowboy Champion Summit is just next week. It's coming up so quickly. So if you haven't registered yet, make sure you go to cowboysummit.com and do that right away. We'll be kicking off Monday night with a live session featuring Ms. Kayla Muscle. She is newly back in the saddle after a really serious injury last year, and she has been kicking butt. But we're actually going to be talking about dreams and setting goals, and it's just going to be a really inspiring message for those of you out there who need a little push in the right direction. And the remainder of the summit will play out over the course of the remaining days that week. So we'll kick off Kayla on Monday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, there will be a new session released. We've got speakers like Van Hargis, Barbara Schulte, Josh Peek, Allison Trimble, and Wiley Peterson. It really doesn't matter what stage you are in with your horsemanship, or even if you are currently riding, if it's maybe something that you want to get back into or get started with, it's going to be beneficial to all of you. The messages are really motivational, and I mean, it's stuff that carries over into everyday life as well. I mean, it's not just about horses. It's not just about rodeo. It's about being the kind of person that you want to be and living the happiest life that you possibly can. So make sure and register at cowboysummit.com. It's totally free to sign up. If you do want to have the recordings to listen to forever and ever, you can buy those right now for only $27. But that price will go up when the summit is over. So make sure if you want to have those recordings, which will be both in video and audio format, along with some amazing free gifts, courtesy of Barbara Schulte and myself, you'll be getting $85 plus worth of products in addition to the videos and audio recordings that you'll be getting from the summit. So $27 and you get a whole bunch of stuff. So be sure to get registered as soon as you can so you don't miss any of the amazing free sessions next week. Now on to our guest today. I know because of the traffic that comes in at earnyourspurs.com that many of you are really interested in Western wear, and both from the fashion side of things and also the functionality. You know, what do I wear? What do I need for what I'm going to be doing? And of course, one of the most iconic things that cowboys wear are boots, which come in a variety of styles, colors, materials, functionality. So I thought it would be really fun to have somebody on the show who knows a lot about cowboy boots. And today, my guest is Stephen Kayla, who is the brand manager for Olathe Boot Company. Olathe is part of a family of different brands of boots, which includes Rios of Mercedes and also Anderson Bean. All three of those brands are really cool, very well made, and all made in America. I learned some really interesting things about boots in our conversation that I didn't know about before, so I hope you enjoy learning some new things as well. And without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Stephen Kayla. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Stephen. I'm really excited to have you here.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
You know, it's funny. Ever since I started my blog, it seems like people are really interested in style types of topics. And, you know, I've covered a few things here and there, but I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily an expert on everything that has to do with Western style. And of course, boots are a big part of that. So I'm glad that I could have a real expert on the show today to talk about that.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I don't know if I'm quite per se an expert by any means compared to some of the men that were with our company, but I've kind of, I guess, been very blessed to be able to learn from some of the best in the business as to why a cowboy boot should be built like we do.
Well, before we kind of get into the nitty-gritty of all that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the Western boot business?
Okay. This may take a few minutes.
That's okay.
grew up in a ranching family. My mother's PhD is in management marketing international business, and she actually teaches at Stephen F. Austin State University. But mom was also at one point in time a professional barrel racer. Dad grew up Gulf Coast also, and grew up farming watermelons, fishing, things along those lines around the Texas Gulf Coast, mainly the Port Bolivar and Galveston areas. And actually, Dad started out steer dogging and then rode some bucking horses and a few things like that. So moved to East Texas, and my grandfather bought a ranch up there and grew up with Brahman influenced cattle and quarter horses. From that point throughout, I guess, high school and 4-H and FFA and rodeoing and things of that nature, I wound up at Texas A&M University. Finished out A&M with a bachelor's of science in ag development with an emphasis in ag policy. And actually, while attending Texas A&M, I actually got to work with Congressman Jim Turner, who at the time was USCD2 in his district office as a legislative assistant under Jerry Huffman, and then went to work for State Representative Fred Brown as his district director there in District 14, which was where Texas A&M was in College Station. And then after college, went private sector for a while, got drugged back into politics, kicking and screaming, and actually was running a congressional campaign for the RNC in Deep East Texas as finance and fundraising director, and came up a little short on our campaign there. We did the right thing and raised a lot of money, just didn't quite have the votes to pull it off in the primary. But the RNC wound up kind of shipping me a couple of different places, and I decided I wanted back in the private sector. An opportunity came along for me to go to work with Caballo Rojo Publishing, which actually produces the Brahman Journal cattle magazine. So I came on as their marketing director and field representative, and got to meet a lot of wonderful people within the cattle industry, and actually grow networking. And it's one thing to hear about everybody talk about the Western lifestyle. It's a whole different one to actually be part of it and see it. Mm-hmm. So I got to travel everywhere from Florida all the way through Mexico with the Brahman and Brahman influenced cattle. And then we picked up the Santa Gertrudis USA cattle magazine as well. And I got the privilege of actually getting to work with the King Ranch when Scott Moore was down there on the Santa Gertrudis division, and actually took a lot of their cattle advertising and marketing and started doing quite a bit there with them to help promote the Santa Gertrudis breed as well as Santa Gertrudis influence breeds, both domestic and international. And with all my trips to the Rio Grande Valley for various things with the cattle, I got to know the fellas that own and run Rio Sub Mercedes Boot Company. Come to find out, we had a lot of mutual friends and brought them on as a client, and started doing some of their print media and website work and things of that nature. And then it just, as the relationship grew, I got asked to come on board. So they moved me in-house, and I've been with them since about 2010 now.
Awesome. So you've had a lot of experience in different aspects of everything Western.
A little diverse. Everything from Quarter Horse Association to, we actually own and show cutting horses also.
Oh, so, okay.
Everything from cutting horses to American Marketing Association. Actually, we're up for 2 Crystal Awards here in the Houston market tonight. So after I get off this call, I get to go brave the joy of Houston rush hour traffic fairly soon.
Oh, wow. Well, that's really exciting. And it's for the boot company?
Mm-hmm. Yes, for the American Marketing Association's Houston chapter.
That's very cool. I actually grew up showing cutting horses as well. So
really?
Yeah, so we have kind of a little bit of a kinship there.
There are so many great studs out there right now, from Woody Be Tough up at the Center Ranch to still highbrow, still sitting out there. Metallic Cat, Thomas Hughes. I mean, there's just so many powerful horses out there. They're doing a lot of great things for that industry. My horse personally is kind of a freak when it comes to a cutter. He's a little over 15 hands, but he's an own son of C.D. Alina out of a Colonel Freckles mare.
Nice.
So a little bit of that old school breeding.
Yeah, it's amazing what horses are doing these days. There's some really phenomenal ones out there for sure.
Which is nice because, as the official boot of the National Cutting Horse Association with Rios, there's a lot of things that we get to actually see, do, and to an extent even test ourselves when it comes to the leathers that we use, the soles that we use, how we build the boots. It's one of those things to where if you stop and really think about it, there's this whole, I'm probably getting in trouble for this, but there's this whole mystical lore around the cowboy boot.
Mm-hmm.
It's components. It's pieces of leather and material that are put together to produce a product that is supposed to be used for a job. So if something's not working, change the component.
Yeah, and probably most people don't think about all of the different components that do go into a boot, and you guys are really doing some scientific engineering of sorts to make sure that, you know, everything from how long they last to how they hold up and all that.
A lot of it's just trial and error. I wish I could say that we were using some type of phenomenal algorithm or some type of extreme equation to figure this stuff out. But a lot of times it comes down to us sending boots out to these cutting horse guys, especially, and just letting them completely destroy them. Of all the disciplines, whether it be the reiners, the cutters, or the cow horse, I would say that the cutters can demolish a pair of boots quicker than anybody.
Why do you think that is?
A lot of it is when it comes down to the way the boot is used. If you'll think about it, now having ridden cutting horses, how much work is done with your legs versus your hands? So as that boot constantly moves in that stirrup, because as you're turning your heel to cue the horse, that stirrup is also connected to the fender of that saddle, which is rubbing up against the inside of your leg where the boot top is as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of wear on a boot. And then on top of that, you've got the on the horse, off the horse, in the wash rack, out of the wash rack, go get another horse, back and forth all day long. The extremes, and it goes from moisture to dryness to even the type of ground you're walking on, whether it be the soft arena sand or it be the hard textured concrete. It's one constant beating when it comes to what those boots get put through.
Yeah, and those guys, especially the trainers and the lopers, they're getting on a lot of horses every day.
Lopers are worse than anyone. I can always tell when a set of boots come in that a loper's had.
Well, having been a loper a time or two myself, I can see why that might occur.
I mean, I guess our kind of benchmark is along the lines, if we can build something that's going to hold up to them, everybody else will be okay. There's a lot of stuff that's out there in the industry today, and there's lots of fun and creative names for different types of material and things. Yeah, we've been building boots. The Riosa Mercedes line has been around for over 160 years. It's kind of one of those things of if it works, why change it?
Right.
I mean, we do some stuff to improve it, but it's still just it's still a hand cut leather insole that's channel welted for fit and comfort. It's still an American made spring steel shank in those boots. It's a hand cut leather stack teal. This is all done in Mercedes, Texas.
And what are the other two brands that you represent?
We also have Anderson Bean Boot Company, and then we purchased Olathe Boot Company in 2001 and moved it to Mercedes, Texas.
So it was in Kansas, but now
right,
it's
it
in
was
Texas.
In Olathe, Kansas, yes.
Okay. All right. Interesting. So what are some of the styles that you're seeing today as far as like it seems that boots have really evolved as far as the style is concerned. And I'm seeing so many different colors and just craziness out there on the market. I mean, is there something that's really popular right now and things that are kind of coming up that you're seeing as far as trends?
You know, a lot of it really depends on several different variables. It's regional. It's what equine discipline you're riding. Whether you're a non-traditional boot wearer, you could be a oil and gas guy. You could be a rig hand, or you might be an executive that wants a pair of cowboy boots. It's pretty unique being able to be here in the Houston market because you get to see a lot of things. With all the oil and gas commerce that we have going on here, we've got people coming in and out on a regular basis, and not just from around the U.S., but internationally as well. I mean, the cowboy boot is a symbol of America, and it's one of those things to where people want to be a part of it. You know, with your question, I'll try to give you the best answer I can based on each different variable. It's kind of funny. With non-traditional boot wearers, they actually want a traditional cowboy boot. They want something that's got kind of a round cowboy toe, a little bit of a riding heel, so a little bit of a higher heel, and tone-on-tone colors. Usually something that's either going to be, you know, a calf skin or a goat skin, or they'll step into an ostrich or maybe even a caiman. Sometimes they'll go on up to a Nile croc, but they're going to be a little bit more conservative in what they're picking off the shelf. You know, here around South Texas and the Gulf Coast, you see a lot of guys that want a 13-inch top, a roper heel, and a wide square toe, double welt stitch. Mm-hmm. You get on into your panhandle area and then up through Oklahoma and kind of up even into your area, and you're going to want a little bit taller top, a narrower toe, single welt stitch, and a larger heel. A lot of it just comes down to personal preference and what the boot's being used for. You know, a reiner typically is going to want something that's got a lower top, so probably a 11 to 13-inch top. and they're going to want a wide square toe, a Roper heel, and probably either a Vibram crepe or some type of hybrid sole. Mm. Whereas, like we were talking about earlier, a cutter typically is going to want something that's going to be a 14 to 16 inch top. They're going to want a narrower square toe, a single welt stitch, a riding heel with a large spur rest, and either a nitrine sole. And I'll go back and define some of these sole treatments. A nitrine sole, or sole that we call the F1, has been really, really great for us in the cutting industry this past year. That nitrine sole has been around for a long time. It's pretty darn close to bulletproof. It's just a really heavy Vibram sole, and it works great. The F1 sole is a version of our hybrid sole that we brought into the market, which is, it's a full leather sole. On the hybrid sole, it actually has a Vibram injection that goes across the ball of the foot. The purpose of that was to add longevity to the life of the sole, but then also to add a little bit of flexibility versus just a straight leather sole. And it's worked great for us. So since the hybrid was working so well, we said, okay, well, how can we improve it? So they came up with the F1, which is a clear polymer that's put across the ball of the foot instead. Some people have asked, okay, F1, where does that come from? Is that, you know, because it's fast like F1 racing or formula racing? Actually, no, it's nothing as intriguing as that. We'd already used the name hybrid. So going back to cattle terminology, we said, well, dadgum, you know, if we've already used the name hybrid, what are we going to call it? I said, well, shoot, call it an F1. So a little cattle terminology there. The F1 is actually the first cross between either a Boss Indicus and a Boss Taurus, or two Boss Taurus or two Boss Indicus breeds. So you get that hybrid vigor with the F1 cross. So we figured might as well go ahead and name a sole something just to confuse everybody. So so yeah, it's the F1 sole. But again, it's just a simple full leather sole that has that polymer injection across the ball of the foot. And this stuff has held up great. It's one of my favorite soles right now, personally.
Yeah. And a lot of people do like leather soles, aside from the fact that they break down faster than the synthetic. So why do people really like that leather sole if they're going to be riding?
Because a lot of it's mental. And one of the things that, you know, we can get into, I'm sure, in a little bit, because you talked about fit. One of the things that is the hardest to overcome is the mental perception of the person that's buying the boot. We get a lot of questions. These soles are going to make me get hung up in the stirrup. Okay, well, do you ride Bronx? No. Are you bucking out 2 and 3 year olds for a trainer? No. Well, how old is your horse? 14 years old. What do you do on it? We go trail riding. Okay. One, the sole's not going to get hung up, but two, I don't think you're going to have to worry about it. And then you get into fit. And I'd say probably about, sadly enough, probably about 85-90% of the people out there wearing cowboy boots are probably wearing the wrong size.
Yeah, well, I think I've done that a time or two myself.
Oh, I was with you. I was guilty of it. I was a 9D. I knew that. I'm a 9D. Well, come to find out, I'm actually a 10D. And it's not that much of a difference in size, but a lot of it is lengthening the arch support, letting your foot kind of stretch out. And then also people's feet change over time. So you might have been a 9D at the age of 18, but probably by the time you're 30, you're probably going to be more like a 10, 10 and a half.
And are different boots made differently so that they fit differently also? So you could wear a 9D in one brand a boot?
Oh, yes. Yes, for sure. A lot of that's the last. The last is the mold that goes inside the boot. There are very few companies that are still doing hand lasting. Mm. We still use hand lasting because the boot maker that's sitting there lasting that boot is actually able to see how that hide pulls around that last as they're molding and shaping that boot versus a machine last to where it just goes down an assembly line. Now, granted, they're able to make them quicker and they can sell them cheaper, but you get what you pay for. And one of the things that I guess kind of the age old sayings is you got three options. You can have it good, fast, or cheap, but you only get to choose two. So it all comes down to, yes, different brands of boots fit differently. I mean, even along the lines of like with our lasts, they never leave the factory. That's proprietary information that stays with us because that's one of the things that ensures the comfort of a Rio Sub Mercedes, Anderson Bean, or Olathe boot. And we use three different types of lasts. A Rio slash is different than an Olathe, which is different than an Anderson Bean. That way, each different boot gives the wearer a better experience depending on what they want. We've got some people that swear by the fit of an Anderson Bean. There are others that can't wear it. They prefer a Rios or even an Olathe. So a lot of it comes down to personal preference.
Yeah, well, I remember, you know, in my younger days working in a Western store, and there were certain brands that the way that they distinguished it in the store was, you know, certain boots were built on a shoe last and certain boots were built on a boot last. And that was why some boots fit you much different than others.
Oh, yes. And then there's so many different things that have been put into the industry. It's a lot of boots now are basically built like tennis shoes. We've got support systems and torsion systems and air injection and gel injection and all these different types of polymers and space age materials. And you just kind of sit there and wonder what happened to the cowboy boot.
Well, I guess the evolution is necessary when there's more people that are walking in them than riding in them all day.
Correct. But even then, though, one of the things that we really benefit from is with a good fitting boot. It doesn't matter if you've got some kind of space age support system or some type of weird high tech polymer. The boot's going to fit right and it's going to be comfortable. Your boot should be able to be worn all day walking around on concrete or in the saddle. Why buy something that's going to hurt your feet?
Right. So how should a boot really fit? Like when you go into a store and try a boot on, how do you know that it fits right?
One of our sales reps, Scott Tucker, who is from Kansas. So I get to pick on Scott occasionally, but Scott probably has had one of the best analogies about the way a boot should fit. A boot should fit like a firm handshake, not like you're trying to squeeze and rip somebody's hand off and not like you're wallowing around in a Kleenex box. It should be a firm, comfortable handshake. It should be welcoming.
Yeah, that is a good analogy. And I can say that some of my boots fit like, you know, somebody was trying to squeeze my hand off.
So, and again, a lot of that comes back to kind of having to educate the person buying the boot. You know, if they're used to wearing a tennis shoe, they're going to want a really loose kind of sloppy fit because that's what they're used to. Mm-hmm. As the boot goes on, there's a certain sound that a good fitting boot should make as you're putting it on. It's a thunk as your foot hits that footbed. Because you want it to be firm enough as your foot goes into the boot that it's going to hold your foot, but you still want to be comfortable enough to where your foot can naturally expand and contract with wear. And you know, a boot's going to fit a little different in Houston, Texas in July than it's going to fit in Montana in December.
Yeah. Kind of like your hat, same thing. They're not always going to feel the same every day. Mm-hmm. So what about some of the different materials that you're making boots out of? Are there certain leathers that people should be looking for depending on how they're going to be using them?
Oh, for sure. That's one thing that we still take great pride in. And, you know, we really don't say that we're a prideful or boastful company by any means. But one of the things that we really put a lot of emphasis on is the fact that we still use all leather construction. There are no foam fillers. There are no cardboard midsoles or things like that. We still use all leather. Leather is a naturally fibrous material. So a leather boot is going to actually be able to work better with your foot than something that's made out of plastic or various types of man-made components. We still use a leather heel counter on the inside of our boots. That's all done for a reason. You want that leather heel counter, for example, to mold around the heel of your boot. One of the things is when you're putting on a brand new boot, your heel should be able to raise up and down a little bit. Because as you wear that boot, that leather heel counter is actually going to mold to your foot. Kind of think of it as like oiling up a baseball glove. You put the baseball on the inside of it and wrap it up real tight and let it sit for a little while. That glove molds to that ball. Same thing as what a boot will do to your foot with all leather construction. On hides, with the way we build the boot, we still use premium leather liners on our boots. A lot of people are going to use a synthetic liner, kind of like a tennis shoe like we were talking about earlier, or a pigskin liner that's of a lesser quality, but it's a lower cost. We still use leather, just premium cowhide leather liners because it works better. On our boots themselves, it really kind of comes down to what you're looking for, what you're going to use the boot for. One of our biggest hits over the past couple of years now has been what we refer to as Big Bass. It's actually Arapaima, which is a farm-raised fish from South America. They're naturally found in the Amazon River Basin. The hides that we're using are actually farm-raised. We're not out there wiping out species. These hides, they're really cool looking, and it does look like some type of prehistoric kind of animal. It's pretty cool. But that hide is great for a dress boot. Do not get a pair of those boots and expect to hang a set of hooks on them and actually go out and do a bunch of day work. it's not going to work. It's a fairly delicate hide, and a set of spurs will eventually, the bands on those spurs will eventually just tear through that hide. That's not what it's intended for. If you transition over to something that you want to have as a good work boot, it's really hard to beat a good cowhide. You know, one of the best hides that we actually have found over the years, and kind of a neat little side note, is smooth ostrich. Bang for your buck, smooth ostrich is hard to beat, especially if it's in like a feed yard scenario. Ostrich hide is actually naturally resistant to acidic materials. So in a feed yard situation where you've got a bunch of manure and other animal excrement and things of that nature, that smooth ostrich is going to hold up a lot longer than a regular leather boot will. So you take that boot, so you take some of the smooth smooth ostrich vamp on it and put an elephant heel counter or a shark heel counter. That's going to actually provide a longer lifespan to the life of that boot, because if you're wearing spurs with it, you're going to want something on the back of that boot that's going to hold up a little bit better than a smooth ostrich or a regular cowhide or something along those lines, because that hide's going to take it a little bit better. One of the things that we used to do is use a rawhide heel counter, especially over at Olathe.
Right.
It's great for rough stock boots. One thing that you fall into, though, is with that rawhide, and I'm guilty of it myself, because Olathe is actually one of the first brands of handcrafted boots that I ever had. And I was guilty of this, just like a lot of people out there are. You leave your spurs on your boots. Well, if that rawhide gets wet and you leave your spurs on your boots, that rawhide, as it dries, is going to kind of shrink up on you. So then when you put your boots back on, that rawhide digs into the underside of your ankle and will dang near cripple you. And it's nothing that's the fault of the boot. It's more of a operator error to an extent. So we still put a rawhide counter on the rough stock boots, because a lot of time those boots are going into a gear bag, getting put on, being used, getting put right back in the gear bag.
Yeah.
But on a lot of stuff that's being done for working cowboys, we're going to recommend either a heavy leather shoulder or an elephant or a shark or something on those lines, because that hide is going to be a little more forgiving on that heel counter and not dig into your ankle if you kind of forget to err on the better side of judgment and leave your spurs on your boots after you used them the whole day.
Is there any reason that you wouldn't get a whole boot made out of elephant or shark, or is it just cost prohibitive? Or
By all means, we've got a lot of people that do a full elephant boot. It's a great hide. You know, there's a lot of things you learn by trial and error. We've got one retailer that is our official retailer for the Cutting Horse, Reining Horse, and Cow Horse Associations, and that's Linda and Randy Davis over at Davis Boots. They can build a cowboy boot. I have learned a lot from them in terms of design and why we do certain things. In fact, you know, Linda's dad is actually in the National Cutting Horse Hall of Fame. So it's kind of one of those things. We are our own customers. So, but like with Linda and Randy, one of the things that I always thought was kind of neat was, several years ago, I was really all about shark. And I thought shark was just some of the coolest stuff out there, because it's tough, it's flexible. This is great stuff. Shark is extremely hot on the Texas Gulf Coast in the summer. Shark hide does not have pores like a elephant or a hippo or even cattle hides have. So that shark hide doesn't naturally breathe like any of those other hides will. Little things like that, you just kind of learn through trial and error.
What about stingray?
Oh, okay. Misconception. Stingray is pretty. It's shiny. It's flashy. Stingray is not going to last you as a work boot whatsoever.
Really?
No, ma'am. Stingray dries out. As you wear that stingray boot, it's going to dry out. And it's kind of like sandpaper. If you'll take a piece of sandpaper and just work it back and forth in one spot over and over and over and over and over again, just like your boots do at the ball of your foot, it eventually cracks, separates, and breaks. Stingray's going to do the same thing. And we get boots back all the time. You know, these things are supposed to be some of the toughest stuff out there. Actually, no, they're not. Stingray is an exotic hide. It's kind of a dress boot. Eventually, it's going to crack and break. You know, the same thing with Cayman. Now, a lot of times you'll talk to somebody and they go, well, I just love my gator boots. Those aren't gator. That's Cayman. Cayman is a reptilian. It's a crocodile, actually, typically from Central or South America. But a lot of times in Western wear stores, they're sold as gator boots because it sounds better. In all honesty, a pair of American alligator boots is going to cost you usually minimum about $1,500 to $2,000 or more, depending on who's making them. So you didn't walk in and buy a set of gator boots off of the shelf at your local Western Wear store for $600. You got a pair of Caymans. Irregardless, those Caymans, they get sold a lot of times as, oh, these things are tough. Well, no, they're not. Again, ball your foot. If you'll notice on that Cayman hide, it's got plating. And in between those plates, there's very supple, very soft skin. So as that boot is worn, eventually it's going to break down, especially if they're not taken care of. One of the things that we try to emphasize is if you buy a pair of Cayman or Nile Croc boots, condition them once a week just to make sure that hide can maintain its natural elasticity. And if you work in them, if you go out and get them soaking wet and let them air dry or even put direct heat on them, you've pretty much signed their death sentence. Those boots are not going to last. And it's nothing to do with the way they were constructed. It's more along the lines of the way they were used.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I don't think a lot of people are aware of that.
No. A work boot, if you're going to get something that you're going to work in, go with something that's either a heavy oiled shoulder, ostrich is hard to beat, elephant, anything that's going to actually kind of think about it like this. If it's something that has to be taken down by a large group of predators, you're probably going to be okay with it.
So if we want to go with the really cool looking exotics, then we need to just wear those out to dinner and stuff, not out to the crowd.
That's your church boots. That's your dinner boots. That's your, I forgot about my anniversary boots. That's what that type of stuff is.
Now, it seems like women's fashion with boots has really taken off over the last several years, especially with kind of the dressier sort of dress, the boots that you would maybe wear with a dress. Do you guys make build a lot of those types of boots as well?
You know, we started a line, and this is one of the lines that we have that's actually made in León, Mexico. We started a line a few years ago called Macy Bean, and it's under the Anderson Bean family. And it's more of the fashion forward concept. There was a lot of flower embroidery stitching. There was a narrower snip toe, a little bit more of a feminine heel to it. It's a casual wear boot. There's a lot of stuff out there that's covered in metal studs and big chunks of rock and silver and stuff that looks like it walked off of a 1940s pirate movie and things like that. You know, it's just, it's neat. It's very fashion forward. And man, they've done a great job with some of those boots. A lot of the stuff that we're seeing, though, is in terms of women's fashion, it's kind of starting to become a little bit more conservative. With our Macy Bean line, even we're going to more of a classic round toe. We're doing some really, really nice tone-on-tone stuff with some subtle stitch patterns and some things like that. It's not more of a, I guess, kind of think of it. It's not more of a running around yelling and screaming, look at me. It's more of along the lines of, it's just a nice, classic-looking boot.
Yeah. Well, I know those are in pretty high demand amongst, well, having gone to the NFR last year, I saw a lot of them down there.
Oh,
yes. A lot of those types of boots.
Yes. And, you know, and it's really great because those boots have brought a lot of people into, I guess, the Western lifestyle industry that might not have been there typically. That non-traditional boot wearer has really come on board. And it's kind of neat. I mean, I just recently did a trip to where I went from Fort Worth with a cutting to Washington, D.C. with an agricultural advocacy group that I'm a part of through the Extension Service here in the state of Texas. And from D.C., we went through Maryland into New York. We stayed in Times Square for two nights. That was pretty interesting. And then from there, you know, I flew to Louisville, Kentucky, had a layover in Chicago, and then back to Houston. And the entire time, whether it be somebody commenting on my boots in the airport security line or seeing the number of people outside of the Western industry that are wearing boots. I mean, whether it be a hipster in New York or a politico in D.C., people are wearing cowboy boots. It's just kind of gladly, it's apparently kind of a thing to do right now.
Yeah, I like it. I think with all these different styles, it's like there's something for everyone. And even if you aren't a traditional cowboy and maybe you might feel a little bit intimidating wearing some buckaroo boot or something, there's probably something that's maybe a little less traditional that you would feel more comfortable in, even if you're not, you know, really Western.
Especially like with the men's side of things, it does kind of, I guess it does kind of serve as an ego bolstering piece of fashion attire to an extent. But you know, we make boots for professional athletes to politicians to music artists. I mean, everyone from, you know, Dwight Yoakam wears Rio Sub Mercedes. We've made cowboy boots for Matt Belisle, who's a pitcher right now for the Cardinals. Even Johnny Manziel. Actually, when Johnny was in New York for the NFL draft, a pair of our Rio Sub Mercedes boots were there with him. Granted, his first year in the NFL wasn't as star-studded as we would have liked, but you know, he's actually getting his stuff together. You can't fault a guy off of 1 year of bad decisions. But, but you know, it's really interesting to see who wears, even for us, who wears our boots, from the Secretary of State, from the state of Texas, to the guy that owns 50 head of cattle over in the hill country. It's really unique to see the people that actually wear our boots and enjoy them.
Yeah, that's really fun. And I was just at a conference recently in Vegas for new media, you know, online marketing type stuff. And my friend Antonio, his website's called Real Men, Real Style. And he just recently did a blog post, a really great blog post about Western boots with infographics and all this information for people that are not Western boot wearers. Mm-hmm. You know, he talks all about how to dress for business and that kind of thing. And he said, you know, if you want to be bold and have a statement piece, then you should get a pair of Western boots, which I thought was really great advice.
And it is. And, you know, one of my really dear friends here in Houston is Michael Berry. Michael is known as the talk radio czar. I think Michael's syndicated in 13 markets now across the nation. But he's just a great guy. Former attorney, Houston City Council, Mayor Pro Tem for the city of Houston. His wife is actually the former Secretary of State for the state of Texas, Nandita Berry. But, you know, Michael's really awesome. And he was kind of that non-traditional boot wearer. And having gotten to know him over the past several years, it's been really fun to sit there and listen to the way he talks about cowboy boots. It's like all of a sudden you see this man kind of moment happen, and you sit there with a nice scotch and a cigar, or a bourbon and a cigar. You're sitting there with your boots, and it's just kind of one of those. It feels right. I mean, you never really heard somebody say, let's go put our penny loafers on the ground and get business done. No, you go put boots on the ground.
And one of the things that Antonio mentioned in his post was you have to have confidence to wear a pair of boots, especially if you're a non-traditional boot wearer, because you're going to stand out. People are going to notice that you are wearing something a little different. And But that's really cool, too.
I guess one of the things that Michael Berry has said in the past is, you know, it's kind of like putting on a superhero cape. A pair of boots kind of does add a little bit to you. It helps.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot of people would love to wear a cowboy hat too, but they find it way more intimidating. Boots are just sort of, I think, more accessible to people.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, there's a lot of guys in the hat industry that have done some really neat stuff to kind of bring in that non-traditionalist as well. You know, Trent Johnson over at Greedley Hat Works does a phenomenal job. Trent makes one of the best hats you can get your hand on. And, you know, he's done everything from, you know, your typical cowboy hat, your quintessential four and a quarter inch brim. He made the hat I wore to Kentucky Derby this year, which looks like something I stole out of Will Rogers' closet. It looks like something out of 1932. And guys like that, it's amazing to see what they can do, just like we can do with boots. You know, another great shop is Catalina Hatters down in Bryan, Texas. The Catalina family, you know, with Scott and Travis kind of taking the helm now, those guys have people come in their store. Football games, especially when Texas A&M is playing at home, Catalina Hatters will be wall to wall people. And it's amazing to see the type of people that walk out of there with cowboy hats. But those guys and Trent, they take the time to make sure that when that person leaves, they got a hat that fits them correctly, is shaped like it should be to fit their face and their style. And it's just that little bit of extra effort that goes a long way. And we try to do the same thing with our boots. We want to make sure it fits right and it's going to be something that you're comfortable in.
Yeah, that's really important. If somebody leaves there feeling good about their purchase, then they're going to enjoy it that much more and they're going to be back next time they need another pair.
Oh, for sure. And it's really neat with the, I guess, kind of the network of friends that we work with within the industry, you know, whether it be the guys over at Greeley or Catalina Hats or the DeBoard family down at Double J Saddlery in Yoakum, or, you know, Keith Mundy over American Hat Company. There's just so many neat people that we start getting to put stuff together. And it's, I guess it's kind of almost along the lines of just having the right people in the right places to be able to do good things. And it's neat to be able to sit there and say, pretty much everything that we work with is American made.
That is huge. There aren't that many people that can say that anymore.
No, for sure. And, you know, it kind of tongue in cheek, and it's not meant in any type of disrespect. One of our little slogans that caught on a few years ago with the Anderson Bean line is there are no cowboys in China. I mean, if you kind of think about it, if you want a pair of cowboy boots, where do you want them to be made?
Yeah, well, definitely the quintessential traditional cowboy is 100% American. There's no doubt about that.
Or Spanish, if you look at it through the
Vaquero. Well, yeah, that's true.
Through the Vaquero lineage. And you actually, the first cowboys in the U.S. were actually in Florida.
Really? Even before Texas, huh?
Mm-hmm. The Crackers. Which is what the crackers now are the result of, and Florida crackers actually refers to the sound of the whip that they use to get the cattle out of the marshlands. The Florida cowboy was there. And if you'll remember, Texas actually used to be part of Mexico. Florida's been part of the U.S. longer than Texas has, I suppose, if you kind of get back into the history of things. But the Florida cowboy was actually the first cowboy per se in the U.S. It's a pretty neat deal. Check it out sometime.
I will.
Now they're referred to as cracker cowboys.
I have actually never heard of that before, but I'm going to have to find an expert now to come on the show and talk about it.
I can send you plenty of those guys. If you want to talk about, you know, we think about working cattle, and, you know, granted, everybody has got their own hurdles to overcome in working cattle. Here on the Gulf Coast, it's nasty, it's humid, it's hot. We've got water moccasins and alligators.
Ugh.
Nasty stuff like that. You know, the places you got to worry about mountain lions, other types of predators, nasty hilly terrain, drought, blizzards, things of that nature. Those guys in Florida, I'll give them credit. I mean, they're out there working cattle in a swamp.
With gators.
Oh, yes. Gators, snakes, mosquitoes the size of small buzzards. I mean, you got to give it to them. It takes a special type of person to tolerate that.
I know. There's days when it's 30 below here and blizzarding that it would be nice to be in Florida, but you know, there's trade-offs no matter where you go.
Oh, for sure. You know, a really good friend of mine, Casey Phillips, is from the Black Hills of South Dakota, and they got just completely devastated by Atlas when it came through a couple of years ago.
Right.
You know, we deal with hurricanes down here. I will say this, we can see a hurricane coming. Atlas, that was something else. It just blew in. That was devastating to the cattle industry at that point in time.
Yeah, it was. That was very sad. Well, Stephen, before we start wrapping up here today, where can people find more information about your boot lines online?
You know, they can go check out our websites, and we're actually going through a lot of website rebuilding right now over the next several months. But they can go check out the websites, riosofmercedes.com, andersonbean.com, and olathaboots.com. But then also check out our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. One of the things that we have a lot of fun with is we like to communicate with the people wearing our boots or the ones that want to wear our boots. Put a post on our page. Send us a message. We will get back with you.
Awesome. So I just have one final question for you, and it's the same one I ask all of my guests. So what do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have?
I would say honor, because along with honor becomes truth, dedication, respect for not only the land, the livestock, and other people around you. They have to have honor.
Absolutely. I agree. That's a great answer. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was awesome talking to you. I know that information is going to be really helpful to the audience.
Alyssa, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Steve and Kayla. I know I learned a lot of things about cowboy boots that I never knew, and I hope you did as well. And I also hope that it helps you the next time you go to buy a pair of boots to know what you're looking for and which ones are going to best suit your needs. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode if you want to do a little online boot shopping. And those will be at earnyourspurs.com/episode40. If you haven't yet subscribed to the show, I sure would appreciate it if you had a chance to hop over to iTunes and subscribe so that you will get the episode downloaded automatically every week. We have a lot of great guests coming up on the show, and I would hate for you to miss any of them. Thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I really, really appreciate you being here, and I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.